You're listening to episode 42 of the Mad Chatters podcast, July 15th, 2015.
Most everyone's mad here.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mad Chatters podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. That around the Disney universe will be especially applicable on today's show, but more on that later. First of all, I'm your host, Derek, and I'm joined by my fellow host, Matthew.
Hello there.
And Jeremy.
To all who come to this happy place, welcome.
All right, guys, I have a riddle for you. What do McDonald's, Coca-Cola cans, and the movie musical Oklahoma have in common?
McDonald's, Coca-Cola cans, and the musical Oklahoma?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. Boy,
They're all bad for you.
I'll give you a hint. They share something in common with Disneyland.
They're all turning 60 this year?
Yes, very Woo-hoo! Good. Yeah.
I win.
Yeah, on Friday, July 17th, Disneyland will celebrate its 60th anniversary since it was first dedicated 60 years ago. So, this episode is all, or mostly at least, about Disneyland. We're going to take a break from talking about Walt Disney World, our favorite place, and go over to one of our other favorite places on the West Coast and celebrate 60 years of park going and park happenings, which, of course, you know, lent a lot to what Walt Disney World has today. We have a lot to thank Disneyland for. So, like always, we're going to start with some news type things, but instead of talking about what's going on at Disney World, we're going to be talking about all the things that Disneyland is doing to celebrate its 60th anniversary. And I don't know if you two have been keeping up with them online, but it's a lot. I mean, we were there for Disney World's 40th, and I realize 60th is more impressive than 40th, but
yeah,
I mean, I couldn't tell you one thing they did to celebrate that.
They had a banner.
They put something on Twitter or something like that.
A banner.
That's about it. But you have to understand, I think Disneyland gets a little more love than Disney World does a lot of the time because it is the original park. Mm-hmm. The company is based in California, so that's where your Imagineers go more often than not with their families, is to Disneyland and that kind of thing, company heads. So, you know, Disney World does sometimes become the redhead stepchild of the U.S. properties, but you know, I can accept it as I like Disneyland. Yeah. So,
and I guess it's kind of hard because with Disney World, you have Magic Kingdom, but then you also have like three other anniversaries to celebrate.
That is true. But the 50th anniversary of the Magic Kingdom is coming up in 2021.
Yeah,
which is not too far away when you think about it.
6 years.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that they do. They should do math. They should do a big celebration for that. So I hope that they do it right because 50 years is a pretty big deal.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, well, let's talk about some of the things they're doing over in California, and maybe hopefully these will be hints as to what might be coming. So first of all, they've updated a lot of attractions this year, which meant earlier this year a lot of these attractions were closed all at the same time. But we've already talked about the Hatbox Ghost being returned. July 1st.
Which, by the way, I hear he's down a lot these days.
Heard that. I know.
I'm concerned about that for our upcoming visit in September, but hopefully they get the kinks worked out.
I hope so, too. Disney's kind of known for opening things before they're completely perfect.
You don't say. Yeah.
So, hopefully.
Speaking of Disneyland in general, anyways.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. On July 1st, Peter Pan's flight reopened. It's been down for several months, but they added some new effects, like the nursery scene. I don't know if you guys have seen pictures of it, but, you know, it's usually like them sitting in their beds, and it's like, oh, that's nice as you fly by. Well, now it's like they're all kind of floating in midair, so you're actually, it's like you're part of that scene. Yeah, they're about to leave the window and fly out.
Matt and I actually watched this on-ride video together.
Oh,
do you remember
that,
Matt?
Special.
I do, last week.
Last week.
You have such a good memory, and you're good at math. You win.
TPT.
Why I'm here.
So what'd you guys think of it?
The video was kind of weird because they had the brightness was turned way up. So, like, the London scene looked really bright and weird and probably not how it really looks. But I did like the inclusion of the little Tinkerbell projection effect in the nursery that's flying around. It's just very similar to what they put in the queue here.
Yeah.
At the Disney World version. And I didn't see anything. I saw some comments on the Disney Twitter sphere about the awkward people floating, but I didn't think it looked awkward or weird.
Hmm.
Yeah, I didn't think it looked bad either. But compared to, like, Alice in Wonderland, I don't really see the seamless projections that I see in Alice there. I mean, at least that was me. I noticed that the moon? You know, when you're over London, the moon looks very different and has some special effects there. But other than that, I really didn't notice anything that, like, stunned me.
Huh. Well, I'm excited to ride it since we just rode it last year in its older version, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I think the other one we've also mentioned, but this summer they reopened Matterhorn, and the thing that I wanted them to change, they did not change, and that is the very uncomfortable seats in those bobsleds. But they did make a more state-of-the-art abominable snowman that kind of, I don't know if it reaches out to you, but it's definitely more active.
Mm, enjoy your Yeti before it gets a strobe light.
That's right. Hopefully it'll still be working when we go. That would be sad. Anyway, so besides that, they've also done the new nighttime spectaculars, which we've talked about. They added three: World of Color, Celebrate, Disneyland Fireworks, Disneyland Forever Fireworks, and the new Paint the Night Parade, which I still have not watched those videos, but I'm hearing, like, more and more through Twitter about what's involved.
We have talked about the World of Color and the Disneyland Forever Fireworks and Paint the Night Parade. At least we've made comments about them in the past. But I have seen video of all of these thus far, and I cannot wait to see them in person because I've been impressed with all three of them. I know that some people have put hate on, particularly the Paint the Night Parade, as far as being too modern Disney, I guess you would say, rather than classical Disney. But I've enjoyed all three of them, and I look forward to seeing them in person. So.
I'm glad to hear that, because I have heard some negative things, especially about World of Color and how I think people say it's kind of jarring, like, from one scene to the next, and then the whole Frozen segment right in the middle.
Yeah. Can I say something about Frozen real quick? I think that the age of Frozen has ended, and we are in a new era, and that is the era of Minions, because as we record this, have you all heard that Minions are now the second best opening for an animated film domestically in history, which is sad. Do you know what the first one, number one, is? It's not Frozen. I was shocked to see what this number one is.
I was going to guess Toy Story 3.
No, Toy Story 3 was second, and they were just enthroned by
Lion King? Minions.
No. You're going to be shocked when I tell you this.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Shrek the Third.
Wow.
That is the number one box office opening for an animated film domestically.
Oh.
Like, I forget how much money it made.
I don't care about that.
Anywho.
So DreamWorks has
number one and number two.
Oh, that makes my heart hurt.
Yeah.
So. For the opening weekend, domestic.
But, I mean, yeah.
Still, though, Americans love their DreamWorks, I guess.
Well they hit hard first and then fizzle out.
Yeah, and this Minions craze is not, I don't think it's going to have the lasting power that Frozen had. Because
I have to say that when I saw the preview for Minions, I have had absolutely no interest in seeing Despicable Me 1 or 2, but this one did look kind of funny to me, and I might go see it. Is that, like, you're going to burn me?
Yeah.
I just don't even know what to say to that.
I mean, it is the thing I hate about peddling the children crudeness and just slapstick kind of humor, but that's what makes it
the Minions
funny.
Are the poop brownies of the animation business.
Nice.
Kids, do kids even know Shrek nowadays?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I've thought that.
It's just one of those things, they get a flash in the pan that they don't create characters and things that are timeless.
Well, because
that's
think
what
about
Disney does the best, Disney and Pixar.
The humor in Shrek is so, it's so, like, mainstream.
Well, it's like a period piece.
Yeah, really. Like, you know, you make a joke that was relevant, you know, in 2008, isn't irrelevant now. It's kind of like Frasier and Golden Girls. Like, sometimes they crack a joke and you're like, who was that? I don't know what that reference was, you know?
Yeah, when it's Golden Girls, though, I laugh anyway.
That is true. I look it up and laugh.
We've reached our token Golden Girls reference, which means we're way off topic, so let's go back to Disneyland, where what else they're doing is bedazzling the castle. Okay, we talked about this when they first started doing it.
Bedazzling is always relevant. I will throw that out there.
What are your thoughts now that the castle is done? They've added the diamond spires and all the many, many, I don't know what, they're like navy
drapes.
Yes, that's what they are.
It is too much. It kind of reminds me of, like, down here, I live in Miami, and we have lots of quinceañeras, and so for, like, the 15 birthday parties, these girls get all dolled up, like, to the extreme, and you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Take that back about 10 steps. Hmm. And that's why I feel like the castle, like, they've done so much glitz and glamour that you're like, whoa, 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 we could have done with just a couple of things. It doesn't have to be all this, but
yeah.
Anywho.
I think I'm just used to it because I've seen so many pictures of it that I'm like, okay. But then when you see a picture of what it looks like on a normal day, it's like, oh, that's so much better.
At least it's not cake.
That's true. But it's got like the giant 60.
Hey, do not hate on that cake castle. That was the most fascinating thing for my 11-year-old self.
Oh,
I have great
gosh.
Memories with the castle cake, so no hating.
Well, we're still talking about it, so I guess it accomplish something.
Yeah, or it's not teepeed for Stitch. Or
yeah, no, that was bad. Okay, this makes me laugh too. They're doing lots of special desserts. Disney parks do these really, really well.
Cupcakes.
They do have cupcakes, I will say that. They're like diamond shaped. Everything is blue, first of all. You walk through this park and like all the signs, like the parking signs, everything is like navy and silver and diamond.
They are nothing if not consistent.
That's right. Okay, but these truffles make me laugh. Three restaurants, signature dining restaurants, are offering like these little boxes that look like, I don't know, like a box like a fancy wallet would be in or something. And they have four truffles per box, and they're $17. And some of the flavors are like creme brulee and bananas Foster. And you have to be 21 to purchase them because of the alcohol content.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I don't know if this is their idea of like, what's the fanciest dessert we could sell? Truffles.
Yeah.
In these fancy
boxes. How much are they a box?
They're $17 for a box of four.
Wow, that's...
But then you get to keep the box.
Ooh.
Yeah, which says like 60th something.
Yeah.
But anyway. And of course, they're selling lots of merchandise. You mentioned that t-shirt last week that says annual pass holders.
Yeah, that tacky thing.
Tacky is kind of the word of the day from most of the merchandise. I think some of it's good, but they are all about the navy and diamond and 60th everywhere.
Yeah.
But I might actually get some 60th ears when we're over there. I think those would be cool.
Oh, I may buy something that's 60th just again to have that, maybe a pen or whatever if they have something like that, mm-hmm. but not the tacky, over-the-top, diamond-encrusted, jeweled t-shirts or whatever they're selling.
Yeah.
So.
One thing I think that's really cool that they're doing are these photo ops. Have you seen pictures of these?
Those look fun. We will be doing lots of those, Derek. I hope you're ready.
Oh, boy. Not with our selfie sticks, though.
No.
Yeah, so they have these, like, you know, at, like, the fair where they have the holes cut out and you put your head in and, like, you're the farmer or you're the astronaut. It's kind of like that, but much more elaborate. And so they've got one by, I've seen Matterhorn and you take it sideways, and so you stand there and hold a rope, and then when you turn the photo sideways, it looks like you're climbing the mountain.
It's like Marmaduke at Universal,
exactly.
Or Islands of Adventure.
Yeah. And then they've got one for Grizzly River Run, where it looks, this is weird, but it looks like you're in the big bear's mouth.
See, I like that one better than I like even the Matterhorn.
Do
one.
You? Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like there might be one for Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, but I could be wrong, like you're sitting
in
the... Anyway, but they've got several, and they look pretty cool, I think. Hopefully they're still there when we get there.
You'll see them on the Mad Chatter Twitter and Facebook page, because we will be taking them.
See, what I'm afraid is these are all going to be summer celebrations, and then the week we get there, they're like, take everything down. Put up Halloween
Christmas
stuff.
Christmas is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing all those. They've got... Okay, these things are so cool. They've got the new windows on Main Street USA. Have you guys seen these?
No.
I've seen the two of them work.
Yeah, they're adding two. They added two this month, and I think they're adding two next month and two the month after that. And they're basing them on six movies, like Toy Story, Cinderella, Princess and the Frog, Peter Pan, Aladdin, and Frozen, of course. But these are like the storefront windows in Main Street, and they're adding... I don't know, but they're like little animated
dioramas.
Scenes. There you go. They're dioramas that move.
Change.
The Peter Pan one is so cool. You see the children like kind of floating in the nursery, and then the whole scene just does it like kind of collapses on itself, and a new one presents itself, and it's them flying over London. Oh. It is so cool, and they're going to add 6 of these by the end of the summer.
Wow.
Again, I heard news that there were a couple of days where it wasn't working.
Well, that's not surprising.
So, we'll see. And then the last thing I had, oh no, 2 more things. They're doing these sweepstakes every day through like Labor Day, I think. And you don't even have to have park admission because they do it at Downtown Disney. But you just put your name in and then there's like a code word of the day. And then they give prizes every day to different winners. And then everybody who entered is also eligible for a weekly prize. And those are even bigger. One of them is a Cars Land tailgate party.
Ooh.
Yeehaw! And then, like, there's like a special dining fireworks package where you would get a free meal and then special viewing for the fireworks. But I think it's pretty cool.
I'm pretty sure the tailgate party is targeted at the same demographic as the poop brownies. I'm just throwing that out there.
So.
That kind of Larry the Cable Guy crowd.
I mean, if I won, I wouldn't turn it down.
No, of course not. I mean, if you gave me a poop brownie, I wouldn't turn it down. But
what's wrong with the Larry the Cable Guy crowd?
Nothing.
You're so elitist. We're not an elitist podcast, folks.
I am. I'm the elitist on this podcast.
I just think this is cool that they're actually giving some... I mean, everything they do is technically giving back to the guests. But, like, the fact that you don't even have to be in the park and you can win these prizes, I think it's cool.
It is nice. Yeah. It kind of harkens back to, what was that, the Year of a Million Dreams or
yes.
whatever?
Yes.
Where they gave away stuff. So, I like
World.
That.
Mm-hmm.
I never won anything, but I like it.
Yeah, you're right, we didn't. I remember walking around thinking, you think someone will give us the Cinderella suite? That would be so cool.
I mean, I was hoping for just like unlimited fast pass for the day or something. Never
That'd
got
nice
even
too.
That. So.
Nice.
You know what was great was the, you know, do the community service thing and get a free day.
Yeah.
I did that.
Did you?
Back when I didn't live here.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we were coming down for a conference and, you know, Jamie or our friend Carl and I... We dressed up as
Carl. He's been gone for a while. We need some Carl.
We need some on the scene reports.
We dressed up as traffic cops at some community festival, and did this little thing for these kids while they drove go karts around, and they gave us our little free Disney ticket.
Wow!
Are you sure it wasn't like some village people impersonations?
No, I think Jamie was actually a stop sign, and I was like a traffic cop or something.
Are there pictures of this? I need to see.
No, it's lost in Disney lore of yesteryear.
The one year they gave, if it was your birthday, you could get in free.
It's your birthday, yeah.
That's nice, too. But they nipped that real quick. They said, that's too many people. But anyway. And
too
then they've put this out on the web. They're asking people who are going to be there on the actual anniversary, July 17th. To quote, wear 1955 inspired ensembles, because you know back in the day they got dressed up, they wore suits and circle skirts and fedoras, and
too hot for that crazy.
That's what I'm thinking. But
who's gonna wear a suit to Disney?
Walt Disney.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's true.
If people do it and they get like good pictures of like crowds in front of the castle, I think it could be a cool thing. But
yeah,
I
really wonder how many people will participate.
Oh, I'm sure a lot. You know, those are people.
The hipsters could just kind of show
those
up.
Those are people.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
That was Jeremy's profound statement.
I meant those are people who are hardcore. Especially, remember when we were there for Dapper Day, and it was really
that's true.
Warm, but people still came out and with their bow ties and jackets and things.
Yeah, and that's unofficial. That's not a Disney thing. Yeah.
I mean, if I was probably going to be there and Disney wanted me to dress up like 50 style and I had the capability, I would do it. So,
all right.
Heat or no heat.
Yes, I believe that.
I do, yeah. Okay, so that's all that's going on for a 16th. It's a lot. They're doing a lot. And I think it's really cool. And I really hope to see at least some of these things. Maybe like a Frozen tailgate party. I guess that theme doesn't really fit.
No, I think it's what's the radio DJ car that comes out? You remember that?
No.
Like, you don't remember in the middle, like it was like around dusk, all of a sudden this car came out with like radio speakers.
At Disneyland?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was
yeah.
like boom, thump. I bet you it has to do with that. Maybe like so, you get yeah. like some barbecue or something around that.
That would make sense, yeah. Anyway, so there you go. One other piece of news that doesn't really have to do with the 60th, but happened last week, and I think is important to talk about. So Disneyland presented to the Anaheim City Council this idea where instead of you ticketing our taxes, which they were talking about doing this year.
Taxing our tickets?
Try that sentence again.
Yes.
Ticketing our taxes.
No, ticket our taxes. I get you.
If you want to pay taxes, you have to buy a ticket first. No. Yes. Taxing tickets. They said, hold off on doing that, and we will put in $1 billion into the park, into expansions. And so they voted, and apparently it was 3-2. Like some people, I think the mayor came out and said, I'm not for this. But they did vote in favor of it 3-2. So in the next few years, by the end of 2017, Disneyland has to begin putting in $1 billion into expansions, and they won't be taxed on tickets for another 30 to 45 years.
You heard it here first, folks. Disneyland is getting magic bands.
Yeah, that's what I said. No, I think the majority of people who live there say they'll get another parking lot because apparently that's kind of a mess. Mm. Some people have said maybe like a walking bridge over Harbor Boulevard because people have to wait at those lights and then walk over. But
you can get a water park.
There's no room for a water park.
Yeah,
they can make room. It's part of the $1 billion. You just blow stuff up.
I mean, it's a lot of money.
Or build the water park on top of the parking garage.
Ooh.
For $1 billion, you could do that.
You could totally have a two-story Disneyland for $1 billion.
That sounds awesome.
That really does. Except for waiting in line for the elevator to go up.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's two levels. You can take the stairs, you lazy bum.
America! It's time for another Mad Chatter game, and now here's your Mad Chatter host, Mad Chatter Jeremy. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Good to be back for another Mad Chatter game. It's been a few weeks since we've had this privilege and pleasure and honor and all that, so it's good to be back. Today we are celebrating the anniversary, but not the anniversary everybody thinks we're celebrating. Not the anniversary of Disneyland. It's another attraction's anniversary on July 17th as well.
And McDonald's!
The anniversary of Splash Mountain. Splash Mountain opened at Disneyland on July 17th, 1989. And then it soft opened on at Walt Disney World on July 17th, 1992. Just 3 years later, until it officially opened on October 2nd, but we are celebrating Splash Mountain, which is my personal favorite attraction at the Magic Kingdom. Is that your favorite attraction as well, Steve?
It absolutely is!
So, there we go.
What a coincidence.
I can't believe it.
So, today we're celebrating, like I said, Splash Mountain with a true or false game. So I'm going to make a statement, and you have to decide if that statement is true or false. And it's all about Splash Mountain and its history and everything connected to Splash Mountain. Are you ready?
True.
Yes.
Then let's begin. First, the attraction is based on the film Song of the South, which was released in 1946. True or false? I'll say the statement again. The attraction is based on the film Song of the South, which was released in 1946. Derek, what do you think?
Oh, I hate true or false questions where, like, any of the little statements could be false. I'm going to say false.
Matt?
I'm going to say true.
The correct answer is true! Congratulations, Matt. It was based on the film Song of the South, which was released in 1946, many, many years ago.
I thought it was going to be like a 1945 release or something.
No, and this again was during the time of the Walt Disney Company during the war years, where they were doing sort of those pieced together films like Melody Time and Make Mine Music and all that. So this had a combination of live action and animation sequences. The film is not available in the United States and hasn't been released theatrically or on home video or DVD since 1986. So a lot of controversy surrounding this film because they a lot of racial overtones. The company's kind of fearful of it. So,
still, the only clip I've seen was from the Disney sing-along VHS I had that was blue, and it had Genie on the front, and one of the songs was Zippity Doo-Dah. And I think I said this on the show, but I loved the song, but had no idea what the heck that movie was.
Yeah. Arguably, the most popular thing out of the film was Zippity Doo-Dah, the song, which is amazing to me. They won't show the whole film, but they'll show clips of that, and they'll exploit that, but, you know. Yeah. Anyways. All right, ready? Next question. The film was based on the stories of Uncle Remus by author Margaret Mitchell. True or false?
False.
Matthew?
I'm going to say false as well.
Both say false, and both are correct. It is false.
Because Margaret Mitchell wrote Gone with the Wind.
Very good. Another Thank famous you. Southern author. The actual author is Joel Chandler Harris, who was actually a news reporter who wrote down these stories about Uncle Remus. And you can buy those at your local bookstore as well.
That is so interesting.
Don't mock me. All right. The next one. Ready? James Baskett, who starred in the film, was banned from attending the film's premiere. True or false?
True.
Sorry, I took a drink. I didn't expect you to answer that fast. Matt.
That sounds true to me. It has a ring of authenticity.
Both say true, and both are correct. It is true. James Baskett, of course, who is black, plays Uncle Remus, was banned from the premiere, which took place in Atlanta, Georgia, at the time, which was still a very segregated city. And so, very sad. But he actually went on to win an honorary Oscar. Well, I say win, but he received an honorary Oscar for his performance as Uncle Remus, the first African-American to receive an Oscar. African-American male, let me say that. I'm sorry, African-American male. Because the one lady from Showboat won before him. But anyways,
True or false, this game is about Splash Mountain. False. It's about song.
I said it's about its history as well. But since you mocked me, now the next question is, true or false, the Disneyland version of Splash Mountain reused animatronics from the Carousel of Progress. True or false? The Disneyland version of Splash Mountain reused animatronics from Carousel of Progress. Derek.
False.
Matt.
The attraction Carousel of Progress?
Yes.
Okay, false.
Both say false, and both are correct. That is false. It used animatronics from
America Sings.
America Sings.
I thought you were going to be Trixie, like, yeah, it was in the same building.
It was, but
yeah,
that is not that Trixie. So there you go.
Trixie, who's she?
Back when Carousel of Progress used to have 100 animal animatronics.
Trixie,
those are the good old days.
She's in Country Bear Jamboree, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, true or false? According to a 1989 Disneyland press release, the attraction features over 100 audio animatronic figures. True or false?
I'll say true.
Matt?
True.
The correct answer is true. Both of you got it correctly. Very well. It actually features specifically 103 audio animatronics in the Disneyland version. The Disney World version has less because since they were not reusing audio animatronics, the cost to create them was too much. So there's actually less audio animatronics there.
That's very interesting because I specifically remember riding the Disneyland version and thinking, where are the animatronics? Maybe it took longer for you to see them for the first time. But there was just lots of riding around the mountain.
Yeah.
It's like, all right.
True or false? Imagineer Marty Sklar came up with the concept of Splash Mountain while sitting in traffic. True or false? Imagineer Marty Sklar came up with the concept of Splash Mountain in the attraction while sitting in traffic.
False.
False? Matt?
It is false.
both say false, and both are correct. It is false. It was not Marty Sklar. It was...
Tony Baxter. You tried to trick us, though. You didn't put the emphasis on Marty Sklar. You put it on sitting in traffic.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
I saw what you did. I can see the magic.
Yeah, Tony Baxter is the father of Splash Mountain. And even though in later times he said, well, I'm not sure if I came up with it in traffic or not, but he said, I definitely did think about it a lot while sitting in traffic in L.A. So there you go.
I mean, come on. Every idea could be invented in traffic, because I'm sure you thought about it at some point while you were driving.
Yeah, it was interesting because at the time they were wanting a log flume ride, and they wanted something to they knew America Sings was going to be closing soon, and so it was kind of like the perfect storm of, hey, we need a log flume ride, we need something for Bear Country, which was not a popular land at the time at Disneyland, even though it had Country Bear Jamboree there, and America Sings was closing, so he thought of the perfect way to solve all three of those problems right there.
It is pretty perfect.
There you go. Practically perfect in every way, one might say. True or false, the name Splash Mountain was chosen because it could be a tie-in with the Tom Hanks Daryl Hannah film.
Oh.
True or false, the name Splash Mountain was chosen because it could be tied in with the Tom Hanks Daryl Hannah film of the same name.
Well, Splash.
Splash, yeah. Splash
Mountain. Yeah. That's just bizarre enough that I'm going to say true.
Matt?
Yes, I'm going to say true as well.
Both say true, and both are correct. In fact,
that was. I'm sorry. I'm gonna let you fill in the historical data here.
Well, the story goes that Michael Eisner, at the time Touchstone was being started,
you'll just provide the commentary. Yes.
The Touchstone film was films were being started, and Michael Eisner loved the film Splash. I mean, was obsessed with it to the point that he had already started planning a TV movie sequel, which came to pass, and he was even planning a splash-themed bar to be placed in a splash-themed bar to be placed in Pleasure Island at Downtown Disney at Walt Disney World. So when he first saw the attraction there, it's interesting because he visited Walt Disney Imagineering. His son actually noticed the model for Splash Mountain in the corner. And he said, hey, Dad, look at this. This is kind of cool. And the original name was Zippity-Doo-Dah Run. But he said, no, you should – there's a mountain and there's a splash at the end. And we have this great movie coming out called Splash. We should call it Splash Mountain. And so that was the theory.
I mean, it works. But it's one of those times when you can see, you know, the director, the CEO walking into the Imagineer's office with not an ounce of creativity in his pinky. I got this great idea. Why don't we call it Splash? I've heard rumors that he even wanted to incorporate some mermaids into the scene.
He did. He wanted mermaids in Splash Mountain, and the Imagineers finally put their foot down and said, no,
why don't you let us do the thinking?
But Splash Mountain stuck nonetheless. It is kind of a dumbing down because I like Zippity-Doo-Dah River Run better, personally, but... You know,
well, it's all right because you've got the three mountains now. But that is the loosest tie-in I have ever heard to a film.
Yeah, but you can tell in his mind he was just thinking like Splash. Anything we can do to say Splash will make people think of the movie Splash.
Splash,
you know, kind of a thing. So, anywho, next question or next statement: true or false? The original voice of Brer Bear in the film is also the voice of Brer Bear in the attraction. True or false?
True.
Matt?
I want to say false.
One says true, one says false, and the correct answer is true. Congratulations, Derek. Brer Bear, who was voiced at the time by Nick Stewart, who was only in his 30s in 1946 when the movie came out, and then later in his 70s when the attraction was made, was able to return to do the voice of Brer Bear once again. All the other actors who voiced Brer Fox and Brer Rabbit had already passed away, so the voice artist who did their voices was the voice of one of the Animaniacs, if you remember that cartoon from the 90s. So, but Nick Stewart there, he returned and was able to do the voice again. All right, next question. The name of the first drop in the Magic Kingdom that you come to is called Trippin' Falls. In the Magic Kingdom, and it may be in Disneyland, I didn't look it up. I only watched the video for Magic Kingdom. The name of the first drop is Trip and Falls.
I'm going to say false.
Matthew.
False.
Both say false and both are correct. It is not Trip and Falls. It is Slip and
okay,
Falls.
Okay, I thought so. But right. I thought
that's
that was the
Splash
second
Mountain
drop.
Was like in the South End. It's the Trip and Falls.
Tripping.
No, and right there you can see the sign right next to Br'er Bear's home right there in that first little drop.
Just oddly small.
Oddly small for such a large rear end that he has. And I only say that because you really see how big his butt is when he's tied up in the rope there in the one scene
yeah.
he's hanging.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, man, that's a Kim Kardashian right there. Anyways, next statement. The name of... Oh, I just read that one. Here we go. The drop down...
False!
The drop down Chicopin Hill, which is the final drop, the main drop, at Walt Disney World is longer than the drop at Disneyland.
True.
Derek says true. Matt says?
I say true.
Both say true, and both are incorrect because it is false. Both are exactly the same length, 52 and a half feet long. However, the fall at Tokyo Disneyland is actually 5 feet longer.
Ooh.
So there you go.
Thrills.
So if you want more thrill, go to Tokyo Disneyland. But here at Walt Disney World and in Disneyland, it is the same. Next question. In the Laughing Place scene at Walt Disney World, a turtle pops up and says, FSU. True or false, Derek?
True that this really is a fact, or true that people say that that's what he says? I'll go with true in both senses.
Okay,
which did you say? What did you just say? What was the question again of the statement?
The question is, in the Laughing Place scene at Walt Disney World, a turtle pops up and says,
false.
FSU.
False.
Derek says true. Matt says false. The correct answer is false. Because it is not a turtle.
I just thought that. Shoot, when you read it a second time, I thought that.
It's the little beaver.
It's a gopher. Gopher thing. And I believe he does say FSU because
you tell us every single time we ride it.
No. Listen, I'll put a video in the show notes. I'm going to message this to you, Derek, so you can put it there. And
I mean,
I think
it makes sense.
It's like right at the 8-minute point. Take the video that I put on the show notes to the 8-minute point and listen. And this little gopher pops up and he says, FSU! And
he actually pops down.
Whatever. The story
ooh,
is
false.
Yes. Oh, wait, it was false already.
The story is one of the Imagineers, which again makes sense because it's in Florida, went to FSU. And so he added that as a little.
And it's did you say this? It's supposed to be like he's sneezing. He's not just randomly saying these
words. Yeah,
right.
It sounds like he's
right. UCLA!
I can't think of anything else he would say that makes sense. Like, nothing else sounds like FSU, you know? It's not like he said a word and you can, by the power of suggestion, hear another word. Like, what else sounds like FSU? I mean, it doesn't make sense any other way. So, there you go. All right, folks. We're coming to the end here. A couple more questions. True or false, Derek, in the attraction, Br'er Fox catches Br'er Rabbit using a beehive.
True?
Okay, Matt?
Is that your answer?
It was true.
It's a very unsure answer. Gosh, I'm having trouble.
FSU?
I'm having trouble putting the scenes in order.
I'm going to say true.
Both say true, and both are correct. Okay. It is true. In the movie, he is not caught with a beehive. He is caught with a tar baby, which is one of the controversies because tar baby was a derogatory term used for African Americans throughout history, I guess, so, or in the United States at least. And so they removed that to make it a little more PC for this time and age. All right, let's see. True or false, Derek? There are 3 vultures overhead in the Magic Kingdom attraction. Going on the Magic Kingdom, I didn't look up the Disneyland attraction. But in the Magic Kingdom attraction, there are 3 vultures over your head as you ascend the final hill.
False.
Derek says false. Matt?
False.
Both say false, and both are correct. There's only 2 of the vultures that pass over your head as you go. Well,
Jekyll.
Is that their names?
No.
Oh, well, they are now.
Yeah.
Well, that was the last question. And with a score of 11 to 10, very close, Steve announced who the winner is.
Well, congratulations, Matthew! You are another Mad Jetter champion!
Hey,
Join us next time, same Mad Jetter podcast, same Mad Jetter fun!
It's time once again to hop in our time rovers and punch in the coordinates and go back in time. This time we're going back farther than we've ever gone before, to 1955, and farther west than we've ever gone before, to California, to the opening year of Disneyland. So hop in.
Time travelers, place all loose items in the pouch in front of you, fasten your seatbelt, and remain seated with your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the time rover. And please watch children. Time travel commencing in T-minus 10 seconds and counting.
Aboard the time rover, we've safely arrived at our destination at 2:30 p.m. on Sunday, July 17th, 1985, in Anaheim, California, for the grand opening of Disneyland. And it's quite hot here today, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Man, and that was a rough ride, let me tell you. 60
Derek,
years.
Who's the president right now?
Oh, gosh. Ah, Eisenhower.
Very good.
Yes. Speaking of presidents...
Back to topic.
Yeah, opening day here at Disneyland was obviously opened and dedicated by Walt Disney himself, but he was introduced by a man that was then just an actor that would go on to become a governor and a future president of the United States. Does anyone want to guess who that man was that introduced Walt Disney?
I know, but you guess first, Eric.
Because you want to make me look stupid.
No, yep. I want to see if you got it right.
Well, I guess Ronald Reagan.
Very
That's
good.
It.
I mean, it was Ronald Reagan.
I was trying to remember Bill Clinton's old acting days.
He introduced Walt with one little line, and now Walt Disney will step forward to read the dedication of Disneyland.
But they were
short
good
and
friends,
sweet.
Nonetheless. They
yes,
were good
yes.
friends.
And that was when that was back in Reagan's. We're not. This is not a political show. This is just a statement of fact. That's back when Reagan was himself a liberalish Democrat, I believe, if I'm correct.
Yes, and he was also starring in great films like Bongos for Bozo or Bonzo or whatever that was with the monkey.
Classic.
Classic.
So opening day at Disneyland, and we can go ahead and venture into opening year. This whole first year, things changed quite dramatically. On opening day at a modern theme park, let's think Disney World, Magic Kingdom, Epcot, anything was opening. What, do anybody know the numbers for like opening day at the Magic Kingdom or Epcot?
Of attendance?
Yeah.
No, I don't. No.
It had to be like 30,000 to 50,000.
That's the first number that came to my mind was 50,000, but I don't know.
Yeah, there were 28,000 guests present for this opening, and this was broadcast live on ABC all over the nation, and it was quite a big deal. And you know, we talk about modern theme parks like Magic Kingdom, Epcot, anything else you think of, and this goes without saying on our podcast, but just for the listener's sake, Disneyland was the first Disney theme park as we know it, and really set the pattern for theme parks, even amusement parks, for all generations. Jeremy, what are some of the things that were unique about Disneyland, even in this opening year?
Well, let me start off by saying that you said only 28,000 people showed up, but that was still twice the number they expected, because this is, again, a day and age before you had electronics and ticketing systems that were done by computers, and the amount of tickets that were counterfeited almost doubled the population. And so they were expecting a lot less people to be there in the parks, but there were twice as many as what they had planned on. And then there
I've read that 6,000 invitations were sent out.
There you go. And then also they had the problem of your ticket had a time on it when you were supposed to arrive at the entrance. And the theory was, well, the guests that enter at 10 will leave by the time that the guests that enter at 2 would enter, kind of a thing. However, people got in the park and they stayed. So they were continually allowing guests to come in, but no guests were leaving. So the park quickly became overcrowded very quickly. In fact, it was not a good opening day as far as the reviews went and people's experiences. The park was still not ready yet. There was talks about plants that were still being planted that day, trees being planted in the ground that morning before the park opened, paint still being wet. This was July that it was open, which was a big mistake. I don't know why they decided to open in July, but the concrete hadn't been settled yet. And in a day and age, again, when people dressed up a little more fancy to go out, women's high heels were sinking into the soft pavement as they walked down Main Street and into the other parts of the park. So kind of a disaster. At that point, too, Walt had to decide between working plumbing and fountains. So none of the fountains were turned on. Thankfully, he chose toilets over fountains.
I don't know. I might not have made the same decision.
And so it was kind of a disaster that first day. But it quickly got better as time.
Well, if you think also about a disaster and something that would be chaotic even today, think about a live television broadcast, which television is fairly young. And there, I think I read correctly that this was the first large live broadcast of its kind. And it was the biggest, the largest viewed. I don't know what they mean by to date. Maybe they mean like ratings wise, not actual like viewers, because that obviously wouldn't be correct. But
to date means up until that point.
Oh, to date then.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, that was the case. And you can imagine live broadcast at that time, everything would have been corded and wired. And obviously everything was bigger from like instruments, like the machines used to broadcast it. The cameras were bigger. There were more people. There were cords draped across attractions in the middle of floors. They set up little temporary broadcasting stations throughout the park in random little small places. And so that would have definitely contributed to the chaos of this event. But it brought the joy of Disneyland to the nation, which, you know, within that very same year would pay off tremendously for them.
I always think about that story that one of the Mouseketeers, I don't know if it was Annette or one of the other ones, but they talk about being in Walt's apartment there over the firehouse at Disneyland on that first day after the dedication speech and once the gates were open and the crowd started to come in, and seeing Walt looking out the window and kind of having a tear in his eye as he saw people flooding in to enjoy the baby that he had made. And that always touches me. So
that's a little awkward.
Well, baby being made is probably not the right phrase there. But
that Britney Spears is full of good stories like that from her days as a Mouseketeer. No, but I was just going to say it's not really a surprise. It's amazing that so many things were open considering they had just started construction less than a year before this. That's an entire theme park. Whereas you think the Frozen attraction was announced in September and it won't be open till a year and a half after that, over a year and a half.
You will never see this kind of construction again.
No.
Like, you will never see that timetable.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and take a stroll through the park and the things you would have seen on the opening day and the rest of that year in 1955. What was opened with just a year of construction? So let's start at the beginning when you first walk in. And, of course, we all know that the first thing you see is Main Street, USA. And the purpose of this was to bring back happy memories of carefree times back in the olden days, the turn of the century. Remind me when Walt was born,
1901?
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So, I mean, this was kind of his childhood. I assume that's kind of the reason behind this. But
well, Walt always wanted to have one foot in the past and one foot in the future.
Ah.
He was always loved looking towards what the future might hold as far as technology and those kind of things go, as evidenced by Tomorrowland. but he was also very much tied to the past and remembering where we came from. So Main Street is definitely a celebration of the past, that turn of the century, what he would have been used to. You know, small town, people still went out into the street and talked business and talked politics and talked friendly, you know, whatever kind of a feel. And that's why if you notice when you go down Main Street, both in the Magic Kingdom here in Orlando and in Disneyland, there's lots of American flags and lots of celebration because it's supposed to be 4th of July every day on Main Street. You know, they'll have a parade, they'll have fireworks. There's no working percent. There's no work going on per se. So it kind of gives that small town feel of something exciting.
Yeah. And I would say of all the lands, when I look at pictures of Main Street USA, it seems to have changed the least in the last 60 years, which makes sense because you're celebrating a historical period.
It's unfortunate that a lot of people view Main Street as just simply a walkway to the park when a lot of people lose the fact that it is an attraction in and of itself.
Here's the problem with that. I'm gonna just be real. I'm just being real right now.
Get real with us.
The issue with that is less of a guest fault. Now, I know that guests are inclined to just shoot right towards the rides. But at least here in at the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World in Florida, the cast members and park, like the systems, park, I don't know what you'd call it, just efficiency systems, moving people around, have a big hand to play in people treating Main Street that way. And I've ranted about that last week with them moving people down the streets during fireworks and parades. And then even during the day with that blasted move it, shake it, celebrate it thing, it goes back and forth like every hour or something like that, right? So yeah. Anytime during the day, the chances of you actually getting to experience Main Street, its theming, its music, the way it was intended to be experienced, you really got to be there at like 9 to 10 in the morning to even see that part of it.
Yeah, because you are enjoying the turn-of-the-century-esque feel, and then all of a sudden you hear, hey, get up, get loud, it's bumping up the party now.
I would also argue that nowadays a lot of it is shopping or the barbershop or bakery, things like that maybe you don't feel like venturing into first thing in the morning. But let's talk about some of the attractions that were there that opening year. I know, of course, the railroad was there. There was a station there on Main Street, like there is today. There was the Main Street Cinema, which is still in Disneyland, and they show... I mean, now they show, like, Mickey Mouse cartoons. I assume it was kind of the same thing back then, just like a never-ending stream of cartoons.
But again, this was more appealing because this is in the day and age before VHS and sure. DVD and those kind of things, so you didn't get to see Mickey Mouse whenever you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If this, can I just list the quote-unquote attractions for Main Street?
I would love it if you did that.
Including shops and restaurants. And that's the thing to remember about this opening day. Disneyland certainly paved the way for the modern theme park as we know it. But when you look at the attractions, they were definitely more centered on experiences and, you know, being somewhere and experiencing something from that time rather than just a ride or a show or something. So these things are considered official attractions for opening day. Of course, there's also shops and restaurants. Main Street featured City Hall, the Fire Department, Plaza Pavilion Restaurant, Bank of America,
hey.
The Camera Center, Carnation Ice Cream Parlor, Coca-Cola Refreshment Corner, the Emporium, the Horse-Drawn Fire Wagon, the Horse-Drawn Streetcars, and the Horse-Drawn Surreys. The Main Street Cinema that we mentioned just now, the Main Street Penny Arcade, Ruggles China and Glass House, the Storybook Shop, the Disneyland Railroad, or the Santa Fe Disneyland Railroad that featured two engines, the CK Holiday and the EP Ripley. So you look at all those and you see, you know, the horse-drawn cars, whether it's the fire wagon, the streetcar, the Surreys, the...
Tell me what a Surrey is.
It's like a little half carriage with two wheels, I think.
Listen, we referenced Oklahoma earlier. When yeah. I take you out tonight with me, with the Surrey, with the fringe on top.
Okay.
Yeah. Think the little Chinese...
little wagons.
Wagon with two wheels on the back, and the horse has the
Thank
front.
Thank you for dumbing it down for me. You sang the whole song, and then, you know, the wagons.
No, but you look at this list, and you're like, that sounds boring, you know, today, because we're like, where are the rides at? Where's the e-ticket or whatever? Where's the thrill? But this was completely different for people at this time. This was groundbreaking. Like, let's actually bring people here to experience something rather than just, you know, get on a ride and get off. Because that's what Walt was looking at with his daughters riding the merry-go-round. He's like, well, that's great. They get on, they get off. It's a ride. It's done. Where's the experience for the whole family? Where's the experience in that kind of thing? And that's what Disneyland was birthed out of.
Absolutely. And those horse-drawn carriages are still there, and I love them.
Chicks and ducks and geese better scurry when I take you out on the surrey.
And I'm going to cut you off there, and we're going to move on to, let's see, let's bypass the castle for now and head left into Adventureland, which we know, when we talked about the movies of the 40s, what's the one where they went to Three Caballeros? And mm-hmm. Jeremy, remind me about the documentary they did of Walt Disney's times in South America.
Walt and El Grupo is the name of the documentary. Now, it is my least favorite of the documentaries that were released during that time compared to Waking the Sleeping Beauty and the Sherman Brothers one. However, it is a nice documentary that talks about and shows some behind-the-scenes footage of Walt and his animators going on a Goodwill trip to South America. This is during the time of the studio when it was on strike, and Walt was also experiencing a personal nervous breakdown during that time, so he went there for vacation as well. But while they were there, they were able to experience the culture in Brazil, Chile, and Argentina, I believe, or Uruguay, one of the two. And those ultimately became what you see in Saludos Amigos and the Three Caballeros.
And I think partly Adventureland. This is supposed to be sort of an exotic tropical place in a far-off region of the world, far from civilization. And I'm sure a lot of the things he saw there, he wanted to incorporate into the park for visitors to experience here without having to go overseas to experience them.
Yeah, Adventureland's kind of an interesting place because you can't really pinpoint it because you have the Caribbean and you have the South Pacific and you have sort of the Amazon.
Well, not in Magic Kingdom, yeah, but there wasn't, I mean, even Pirates of the Caribbean wasn't there, first of all, and then when they added it, it was in New Orleans Square, not Adventureland.
Yeah, that's true, you're right. So, I guess sort of that Amazon, but even Amazon and South Pacific are still worlds apart, technically, on the globe, so.
That's true. Now, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, the only attraction opening year in Adventureland was Jungle Cruise, is that correct?
Yes, and okay. There was one shop, I guess it was a shop or restaurant called the Red Wagon Inn.
Okay.
Which,
Red
Wagon Inn. And the Jungle Cruise, I didn't know this till looking this up today, on opening day only featured two boats, the Ganges Gal and the Congo Queen.
Wow. So you thought lines are long today.
Right.
Yeah. And this was, now, you think, when you hear the rest of the attractions for the rest of the park, and you can imagine they're all fairly subdued attractions, the Jungle Cruise would have been, I think, in my mind at least, kind of the most technologically advanced, adventurous, exciting attraction there.
I agree.
That day. It was a boat ride, you know, into the jungle. There was the unknown, and then you had the really elaborate animatronics, you know, for that time, and really elaborate set designs. And so the Jungle Cruise was one that a lot of time and effort was put into. And so that opening, I mean, for a long time, that would have been, I think, to me, one of the biggest attractions and the draws to it. But Walt had a special connection to Adventureland, I think, because he enjoyed wildlife, and as is proven by the Walt Disney's True Life Adventures series that he did, he loved animals and educating people about the wild and animals and all that good stuff. So Adventureland was a special place, and I think it's fitting that it probably had the most exciting big attraction there on opening day.
Well, and he grew up during that culture of the adventurer, you know, in the 20s, and so I think, yeah, he had a nostalgic level to that as well. When you think about, like, Up, the movie Up, how they have that sort of fascination with the, you know, traveling to these exotic places, particularly in South America and untouched places by Europeans and Americans. So, yeah, it has that feel.
Walt Disney said of Adventureland, "Here is adventure." Here is romance. Here is mystery. That's very dramatic, isn't it? Mm. Tropical rivers flowing silently into the unknown. The unbelievable splendor of exotic flowers. The eerie sounds of the jungle with eyes that are always watching. This is Adventureland.
Mm. Wow. Yep. What a wordsmith.
He was. He had a speechwriter.
Yeah. Marty Sklar wrote that.
All right. Let's keep going. Where are we going next, Matt?
Frontierland, if we're going in order, very similar to the order you find at Walt Disney World, but at this Frontierland, you will not find the Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. You won't find Critter Country for that, or Bear Country, as it would have been called later. You won't even find that yet, so no Splash Mountain, no Country Bear Jamboree. In Frontierland at this time, you have the Chicken Plantation Restaurant.
Woo!
You actually have to kill your own chicken. That's one of the... feel like you're on the frontier, you know?
You go out there and snap a neck or two. The Davy Crockett Arcade, the Frontier Trading Post, the Golden Horseshoe Review at Slewfoot Sue's Golden Horseshoe Saloon, the Mark Twain Steamboat, the Mule Pack, that's my personal favorite, yes. And the Stage Coaches. And so at this time, over there where... The mine train, what do they call it? The mine train through nature's wonderland would soon go, which is now where Big Thunder Mountain Railroad is. Mm-hmm. That's where the mule pack and the stage coaches were. And the mule pack is exactly what it sounds like. People rode on live mules as if you were taking a tour of the Grand Canyon on a mule back. You got in a line with other people on mules and you walked around this kind of made up Western scenery kind of thing. And the stage coaches were the same thing, except obviously in stage coaches.
Right. Yeah, if Main Street USA was the turn of the century, this was, I see it as like kind of the gold rush era, like the pioneer days.
Yeah.
Which pack mules fit, but nowadays you couldn't get away with putting that in a, you know.
No, you have PETA and everybody else going insane.
Oh, that too, yeah. So in 1956, they built this fake town, Rainbow Ridge, and that's where the pack mules went through. So they became the Rainbow Ridge pack mules. But I think it's cool because that town, when they eventually tore it down and put in the Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, some of those facades are still there. And I noticed them.
Oh, yes.
On Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. But I think at the time I didn't know what they were. But now I'm more familiar with them. And I think that's cool that they left those standing.
And this was just big. I mean, Main Street USA, when you look at Walt Disney in general, I obviously had a lifelong obsession with trains. But I think even when he thought theme parks and when he was looking forward to Walt Disney World and especially Epcot as he planned it, it was heavy on transportation. He loved different modes of transportation and movement. And when he's describing Frontierland at this time, he says, this is America in the exciting days of the covered wagon and the stagecoach and the advent of the railroad and the romantic riverboat. He just liked different ways of people doing and getting places. So this is all, you know, that part of that kinetic energy we like about Disney theme parks today was birthed on purpose by Walt Disney with trains and boats and mules and coaches going everywhere when you came into the land.
Listen, a few years ago, I went to an old-timey movie studio in Tucson, and they had this attraction where you could ride in like an old-time stagecoach. It was so hot in that stagecoach. I cannot imagine in 1950 going to the park in a suit and riding a stagecoach.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Vomit. Need some vomit bags on there.
When we were at Disneyland last year and going this year as well, there was something about certain places in the park when I knew that Walt Disney himself had been there and it hadn't been altered very much that was so special to me. And one of the places that I felt that way was in the Golden Horseshoe. When we walked in, you know, you just kind of saw, I remembered in the Walt Disney documentary that I have, it talked about how he and Lillian, like I think it was a week or two before the parks opened, they celebrated one of their wedding anniversaries there at the parks in the Golden Horseshoe, and they invited all their friends and things, and they talked about how the sidewalks hadn't been poured yet, but everybody came in, and Walt was so happy during that time, and really just, it was just like a joy for him to have his friends in his park. And anywho, so being there in the Golden Horseshoe and standing where Walt stood himself, you know, and just kind of taking that all in really was special to me. Mm-hmm. So anywho.
My favorite part of Frontierland that opening year was Indian Village. And it was down by the waterline. And you could see teepees and totem poles. You could meet a real-life Indian chief. You could ride the Indian War canoes, which actually still exist at Disneyland. They're the Davy Crockett Explorer canoes.
Which is the worst idea I've ever heard. Because
you have to propel yourself around the river.
Yeah, you paddle yourself. I mean, that does not seem fun to me.
In California. Like, it's so hot. Sometimes. Anyway, but yeah, that didn't last very long.
Well, it just sounds like, and especially in today's culture where everybody is very careful to offend, having an Indian village is very, you're treading on some ground there.
Well, so. Yeah, it's a little exploitative, but at that time, it wouldn't have seemed as such.
Yeah, a different day and age. Remember, 60 years ago, we weren't as sensitive as we are today, for better or for worse.
Yeah. Shall we keep moving to Fantasyland?
Let's do it.
Before we offend somebody.
Now, this would have been probably the first place that many people would have gone because the procession from the opening speech at the front of Main Street led people down Main Street, USA, to the castle where they lowered the actual working drawbridge from Sleeping Beauty Castle. And everyone dropped in. I remember this clip that's really funny and awkward. You can look it up, of Art Linkletter, who was the host for this whole ABC special of the opening at Disneyland. He's standing at the front of the bridge after it's gone down, talking to Walt. And, you know, there's kind of small talking about what Walt thinks of everything. And the scary-looking characters are there in the background, like, creeping in on him. And then Art says something to the extent of, okay, let's go. You know, like, let's go in and explore. And the two men kind of turn around, and they're trying to get their arms around each other. Like, you know, like to walk in, and neither one knows where to put their arm. So it ends up, I can't even remember how it ends up, but it's funny to watch because you can tell it's like super awkward. I think Walt just like grabs his coat and it's like, let's go on in.
Kind of that same awkwardness when Ryan Seacrest tried to high five the blind guy on American Idol.
Yeah, similar. Just look that up. That's a funny little clip I think is amusing. I never heard anybody like officially talk about it, but it's funny to watch.
Well, wasn't there an actual knight on horseback that led the way when the drawbridge was dropped?
Maybe.
I believe so.
We didn't really talk about the castle, so I guess we talked about it in our episode of the 1950s films, but remember Sleeping Beauty wouldn't come out for 4 more years to theater. Yep. So this was kind of the first introduction they were having to Sleeping Beauty, was the Sleeping Beauty castle. But as you do now, you go through the castle and then voila, there is Fantasyland all around you. You're right in the middle of it.
Yes.
And many of the opening day attractions are still there.
And don't forget that in Sleeping Beauty's castle, there was a Sleeping Beauty walkthrough, which went away for a time and then came back. That wasn't on opening day?
I don't think that was there.
Oh. I meant in a couple of years, there was going to be a Sleeping Beauty walkthrough.
Hey, Cinderella was before 55, right?
Yeah, 1950.
It's curious that he went with Sleeping Beauty as, like, maybe they knew that was down the road and were trying to build hype for it. They would have been already animating at that time. They probably would have already been working on it.
Yeah, I would imagine that it was.
All right, well, that answers that. Some of the attractions you would find in Fantasyland at this time were what we now know as the Storybook Land Canal Boats were the Canal Boats of the World, which, from what I understand at this point in time, were not in the least bit completed and were basically just a little figure eight around this little dirt pile.
Yeah, that's what I saw too.
I saw that the boats didn't even propel themselves, that they had cast members and like waiters pushing the boats through on opening day.
This is also where one of those famous, those little famous stories come from, where when the guest had complained about there being nothing to see or do on the canal boats, Walt began making up random, told the Imagineers or whomever, the groundskeepers, to make up random names for these perfectly ordinary common plants, make them sound real exotic and put the names in front of them on this ride so people would think there's something different there.
Yeah.
Just so, you know, Walt.
Well, that's why this closed 2 months later and then reopened in 1956 as the storybook Land Canal Boats. I thought it was cool, the Monstro Mouth, like you go through Monstro of the Whale's Mouth. Yeah. That was actually going to be for another attraction, I'm guessing themed to Pinocchio. And you were going to like go through the mouth and then like go down the hill and be underground or something. I don't know. But they were like, it's too complicated. Let's just combine these attractions.
Let's do that.
I know.
No, I like storybook canals. Oh, I think they're wonderful.
No,
that's
great. But
that was one of my favorite attractions when we went last fall.
We know. We know.
And that little, our little narrator, how
other attractions was. Other attractions included the King Arthur Carousel, which was your carousel, obviously. The Mad Tea Party, which
that
we
was
would
smart
know
for them to name it that then.
Yeah, the teacups, as we would know it, the Mad Tea Party. Merlin's Magic Shop, obviously a store. And then three dark rides, which still exist to this day, although not obviously in the same condition. That is Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, Peter Pan's Flight, and Snow White's Adventures. Now, here's the thing about these dark rides. This would make a good dissertation for someone that was doing their PhD work in Disney attraction theme park stuff. Yeah. Write a dissertation about how these dark rides, I think more than anything else on this list of attractions, the Disney-style dark rides paved the way for every single Disney attraction that we know and love today. Mm. Pirates of the Caribbean, Haunted Mansion. Even today when people are like when Snow White Mine Train was coming out, are being built, and you know it was leaked out that there would be a dark ride segment. People lose their minds over stuff because that's just classic Disney entertainment. You know, you use the black light, you immerse people in the story. There's at least scenery, animatronics. It's all there in those dark rides, and those three are still there at least at Disneyland today.
It's true.
With the addition of Alice in Wonderland, which wouldn't open until 57, 58.
Later this same year, Dumbo and the Casey Jr. train were added. So, Fantasyland had a lot to see for sure. Especially people who, when they thought Disney, thought these films. Like, I personally would want to head there first because it's Dumbo or Tinkerbell, you know.
This has one of the greatest initial names when they were drawing up. Like, I mean, we're talking like very preliminary concepts for Disneyland. Once they decided to not, you know, the original plan was to make Disneyland this little amusement park that was on the studio property just across the street. And once they decided they wanted to do something far bigger, they began preliminary sketches. And one of the preliminary sketches called Fantasyland, which was actually going to be in the court of this huge castle. It was going to be inside the castle itself, inside the walls. It was going to be called Lilliputian Land. I think that's just so 50s, you know, Lilliputian. I think that's another word for elves.
What I saw was that the canal boats of the world specifically was going to be Lilliputian Land because it was all like miniature sets.
Oh, I don't know. I just see in that the drawing that I'm speaking of, which you can probably find online, you see, unless it's labeled close to that boat ride, and I didn't see it.
I could be wrong, but I think the whole area was always going to be Fantasyland, but Lilliputian Land was where the boats were, and you're going to see like miniature sets, and then they kind of changed it to just plants, and then changed it to movies.
Lilliputian, though.
Still, that's fantastic.
That goes great on an attraction poster.
And it just rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah. All right, well, you kind of already mentioned the Rivers of America, but I feel like the Mark Twain riverboat was like a big deal, was it not?
Well, yeah, because I think it was like one of the larger attractions of as far as scale goes.
Definitely.
In the whole park. Like, and people, again, you're talking 1950s before the internet, before the worldwide connection. So the fact of the thought of the Mark Twain being on the Mississippi, which was worlds apart from South California, you know, it had an appeal to them as far as something almost exotic in a sense.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that in there because I think that was probably one of the headline attractions.
Yeah. Did you hear, though, they didn't quite understand on opening day what the capacity for the Mark Twain was? So they overloaded it to the point that as the boat was going down the river, the crowds would shift from one side of the boat to the other to see what was on the shores. And at one point, it started to list back and forth and take on water. So they really quickly said, whoa, 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 instead of letting 500 people on at a time, we'll let just 300 people on before we sink the boat.
Well, let's head over to the final land of Disneyland opening year, which was
Storybook Circus.
Tomorrowland. Now, you talk about things not being ready. From everything I've seen, Tomorrowland, just in general, wasn't really ready.
Should not have been open.
Yeah. They just like stuck a big rocket in the middle of it, and that was Tomorrowland.
Yeah. I mean, you think you're kidding, but... well, I mean, first of all, think about... I mean, Tomorrowland today... I mean, it has some growing pains. Like, it's just hard to always keep looking to the future. But when you think about the fact that Sputnik hadn't even gone into the atmosphere yet at this time, like, anything space-related, I have to imagine would be fascinating to people in the 50s. I could be wrong. Like, that could be totally naive of me. But I feel like that was probably the case. But they did have some... I think it was like space heavy as far as the things that it was space heavy, and then there were a lot of like corporate sponsors that put in their attractions. Do you have a list of those, Matt?
I don't. There's not a long list. The opening day, at least, was just the Autopia, which we would know here in the Magic Kingdom as the Tomorrowland Speedway. I think there it's still called the Autopia, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting thing about that, nowadays when you ride the Autopia, or Tomorrowland Speedway, we're going to call it, there's a little guardrail where you drive, and if you try and turn too far, you hit the guardrail and you stay. There was no guardrail on opening day.
That's great.
Kids were just buzzing around this track, smacking into each other. In fact, I think it was Floyd Norman, who was an Imagineer at the time, I believe it was him, talking about how he rode the attraction with a child, and they were speeding around and smacked into a car and ran them off into the grass. And it was actually Walt Disney and a child in that car. And they were all mad and upset. So needless to say, it didn't take too long before they made some changes, because I think the cars at the end of the day, like half of them were unusable, you know, kind of thing, because they'd been wrecked and rammed and all kinds of things.
Dang, it's the best attraction at the park. Are you kidding?
That sounds funner than what they got now.
Yeah. For sure.
Other attractions included the exciting Circarama USA, presenting the film, appropriately enough, A Tour of the West.
This was like the introduction to Circle Vision, wasn't it? Is the first?
Yeah, I'm sure it was very, very, very significant at that time.
I'm sorry. How is that Tomorrowland?
It's the technology.
I think it's circle vision.
That makes sense. But yeah, you just take a tour of the Western United States.
But look, we can look all around us, and there's screens everywhere that show us the picture.
In the future, cameras will be 360. I don't know.
That works.
The next fun stop on our tour of Tomorrowland is the Monsanto Hall of Chemistry.
I think this is one of those corporate sponsors I was talking about.
Yes, doesn't that sound fun?
Absolutely.
So tomorrow. And then Space Station X-1, which I'm not even sure what that is or was. That might have been just the rocket.
I have an explanation here. It says, no, the rocket was the rocket to the moon. That was like out, well, that was outside. Rocket
to the
moon.
Oh, it's like out front. Okay.
Yeah, it's out front. Rocket to the moon showed like projection screens that made it look like you were in a rocket going into space and like leaving Earth behind you.
Yes.
Okay, Space Station X-1. Visitors entered a plain-looking building and stepped up to a platform with viewing windows. Ooh, are you intrigued already? Mm-hmm. Beneath the windows was a curved, rotating, painted canvas depicting our planet from a distance of 500 miles. Animated clouds and billowing forest fire smoke and nighttime city lights breathed life into the scene.
That almost sounds like what you see in Space Mountain's Q. They got that curved thing going on with the star tunnel.
A little bit, yeah. But, like, it was all just kind of, like, almost like stage effects to make it look like you were looking at Earth from far away. Which, honestly, I think would be pretty cool in the 50s. Like, I feel like that was probably high tech.
What was the attraction they just closed in Cars Land called Luigi's Flying Tires?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the UFOs. And
the Flying Saucers.
Yeah,
flying
wasn't saucers. That on opening day?
Or no,
was that...
not opening day.
Oh, okay.
The Phantom Boats were. Okay. Have you heard about the Phantom Boats? Those are kind of a legend among Disney fans. They were called the Tomorrowland Boats, and I had read at one point that on that opening day and that opening year, like no one went to them. They were the least visited attraction because I mean they were just boats that kind of went around this little lake, and so in August, just a month later, they became the Phantom Boats, and they added these like tail fins to the back that were like mechanical and they moved. But apparently they were a nightmare, and were like people were getting stranded out in the lake constantly on these boats. And so they closed. And it's one of those legends where, kind of like the Hatbox Ghost, where it's like, were you one of the few people who rode the Phantom Boats before they closed? Because they lasted so short amount of time.
Do you all want to ride the boats, or do you want to go stare at the screen and see the Earth from 500 feet away?
Yeah,
or go look at a periodic table.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't the only one. They had the Kaiser Hall of Aluminum Fame, where you just look, you could see like a 40-foot polished aluminum telescope. You could sign a guest book with an aluminum pen. There was an aluminum pig.
Aluminum foil for covering your various baked goods.
But again, this is what my dissertation would be. Does this not just speak to the optimism of the space age of the 1950s and 60s, where people were just, even if it was dumb, they were just excited about space and the possibilities, you know? And I think that's what, you know, pop culture in general during the 50s and 60s, and you see these great TV shows like The Jetsons and Lost in Space and Doctor Who, they all pop up with this, and Star Trek, I mean, the king of them all, as far as this optimism about what the future could hold out beyond our skies. So I think even if Tomorrowland sucked, which it sounds like it sucked, you know, as a whole, people were still excited about it because there was still this excitement about, ooh, you know, the future's so bright, we got to wear shades kind of a thing. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just 3 weeks after opening, they did add a 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea movie set walkthrough, which I feel like probably brought in some visitors for that. So, yeah, not a lot going on those first few years. But I think when the Skyway opened, whatever that year was, and the People Mover, whatever year that was, probably did a lot for this part of the park.
The People Mover? Oh, that was the monorail. The monorail and the submarine and the Matterhorn would wait till 1959, I think. I don't remember the People Mover, though.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know exactly the monorail year, but it had to be before 60.
Or it was 59.
Okay, 59, because Nixon was vice president, and he did the ribbon cutting, and he left office in 61. So there you go.
That's after Walt Disney got turned.
People Mover didn't open until 67.
67. Oh, okay.
So I guess there were other things to look at before that time.
And what, Space Mountain in 75? Is that right? 75, 77, 73, 78?
I think it was 75 for Disney World.
No, 77 for Disney World.
Well, it was after that for Disneyland.
Oh, okay. So there you go.
Well, a few notes that we didn't say before, but admission, they did have the tickets, like per attraction, but they didn't have D or E tickets, just A, B, and C. And they were 10 cents, 20 cents, 30 cents, respectively.
And have you seen, you can actually, I don't know if you can buy it, if it's in a museum or what, but they have ticket number one still preserved.
That's cool.
That they sold at Disneyland, excuse me. So.
Hey, you know what's really good for exploring this, and what really, really connected me to the Disneyland park as someone who hasn't been in 20 years and didn't appreciate it for what it was then, although I was a Disney lover, is the Disney Treasure series they released in those metal tin boxes for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, don't get me started.
You can probably find them on Amazon or eBay. This one, the Disneyland.
You can.
I think it's just called Disneyland, and it's probably butt expensive.
That's the thing. You can find them, but they are butt expensive. Because
I bought it for $40 at the Best Buy when it was released.
I'm jealous because these came out right when I first jumped into the fandom. What was it about, like 2007, 2008? Yeah. And now I look back and I'm like, I should have bought these when they came out, because now they're all over eBay and Amazon for $100+.
The footage has the whole broadcast from the opening day on it. It has a lot of the behind the scenes, like looking at the pavement and the little various places where they were setting up the film crews and broadcasting. And it just has a lot of little short documentary specials about, like, the transportation of the Jungle Cruise animals is pretty funny. You know, with the animals being transported down the highway there in Los Angeles. And
If you own any of these treasures, speaking of a train coming through, if you own any of these Disney treasures and you want to get rid of them, I will gladly take them off your hands because I am jealous that I don't own any of these. And I wish they'd re-release them, but I doubt they ever will. So,
well, thankfully, we do live in an age of technology where constantly more and more, I'm still seeing brand new photos of those opening years that, you know, have never been shown before. And it's so cool seeing people on these mules in Disneyland. Or the one I saw the other day was, like, they hadn't really put down paths yet. I mean, there was very little asphalt. And the asphalt they did have, like you said, people were sinking into it because it was so soft. But people were just walking right by the castle because it was just like dirt and like little, you know, short plants kind of growing around it. But people were just walking, like you could lean over and lean against the castle if you wanted to because it's just kind of right there in the middle of this land. Mm. But pretty cool stuff. And there's a lot of history there. And Walt Disney World owns a lot of what it has to Disneyland. In fact, theme parks in general owe a lot of what they have to Disneyland. And I think
the world owes a lot to Disneyland.
Yes, yes.
Mission accomplished.
You made it! I knew you would, and guess who made it back with you? I better find it before security does. Thanks for everything!
I have a wonderful quote by author-writer Ray Bradbury to close out our section with. Bradbury being a personal friend of Walt Disney and a Disney park fan up until the day he died, which was just a few years ago, wasn't it? Or last year?
Yeah, recently.
Okay, so from Ray Bradbury, he makes an excellent point about Disney and Disneyland. He says, Disney was a dreamer and a doer. While the rest of us were talking about the future, he built it. The things he taught us at Disneyland about street planning, crowd movement, comfort, humanity, etc., will influence builders, architects, urban planners for the next century. And how true that is. Even if they had to learn it the hard way after opening day and through this first year, it is so true to look at the things that Walt Disney and especially Disneyland and his ideas shaped not only theme parks and amusement parks, but really the future and the world.
Well said. And with that, I'm going to sign us off and say we will see you next week.
Take a little time to find the magic in every day.
Bye-bye now.
To all who come to this happy place, welcome. Disneyland is your land. Here age relives fond memories of the past. And here youth may savor the challenge and promise of the future. Disneyland is dedicated to the ideals, the dreams, and the hard facts that have created America, with the hope that it will be a source of joy and inspiration to all the world.